You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's that book you've been reading about?
It's about heroes who get to go on adventures, defeat the monsters, and save the day. Little boy from the south side of Chicago, the only tourist to get to do that.
This story is about my father
and the secret birthright that's been kept from us.
You're going after it. We're going to need a car.
He's gonna stand there, Tick.
This is family business. Can family stay together?
We're surrounded by monsters. I'm doing this to protect us.
You can't win this game. They're setting up for you to play.
This legacy belongs to our family.
We gotta face this new world.
This is our family story.
Hello, and welcome to the first official episode of Lovecraft Country Critical. This is a fan critical child podcast, so you may know us from other shows such as The Watchmen Watchers. We've go back really far, Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Castle Rock. But we are here
suitable for children though.
Well, neither's Lovecraft not. Country Critical, to be honest. There's a profanity warning. It may not be suitable for young people. This show is dedicated specifically to following the new HBO release, Lovecraft Country, where the first episode came out today. Very exciting. So my name's Emma. I will be your host for this season. I'm also joined by Len.
Hello there.
Gareth.
Hello. That's more normal.
Yeah, your actual voice.
And John.
Hello da.
Hello.
See, all of us doing normal voices and Len being weird.
I thought we said we're doing accents.
Hello. So hopefully we've all watched the first episode, and it's nice to have almost all of the fan critical crew here. Not again, John. You did this on Saturday. The premise of this adaptation, a 2016 novel written by Matt Ruff called Lovecraft Country, which is loosely inspired by both the canon of H.P. Lovecraft and other science fiction and horror, as well as being set in Jim Crow America. So really interesting concept. We were really excited by the trailers and the teasers. And it'll be interesting to see if the first episode has lived up to our expectations. So the way we're going to run this podcast, going to get everyone's thoughts on the episode, their blueberry scores, which whoever goes first gets to explain. We will run through the plot and talk about some of the key scenes and things that have happened, a bit about the characters that we meet and what's going to happen later in the series. And then I will pass over to Len for Cthulhu Corner. Where we'll talk about all things canon, basically. Not
all
canons.
All hail Cthulhu.
All hail Cthulhu. Skip that.
But to kick us... That was terrifying. I don't like
That's
it.
That's our intro music.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Can you imagine? But to kick us off, Gaz, could you explain the Blueberry system, tell us what you thought of this first episode, and give it a score?
Well done. Coming to the creator of the Blueberry system.
I was going
to
say starting with the worst one, but yeah, go on. Yeah.
I'll leave off.
Starting with the creator of the Blueberry system.
Gaz is my third favourite.
Out of us three, yeah?
Are you including yourself in that, Emma?
Yeah, I'm my second favourite, yeah.
All right, Blueberry System is a simple beast, 0 to 5. And I've got him here with me. 0 to 5 blueberries. 0 blueberries if it's absolute rubbish, and 5 blueberries if it's absolutely fantastic. And there cannot be half blueberries, because halving a blueberry is madness. Something
insanity
that a character in Lovecraftian fiction might do. Just to prove how crazy they've gone.
Maybe if they were in the mountains of madness.
Oh, ooh. Good.
Yeah. Good, that. Even right. I knew that reference. Cool. So there you go.
All right, so that's it, really, the blueberry system.
Thanks, guys.
I'll apply it to episode 1 of Lovecraft Country, shall I?
Yes, please.
Well, I'm going to tell you straight off the bat, this first episode gets 5 blueberries. I loved it. I absolutely loved this. I think it was an hour and a bit of television. It's a lot of fun. It's like, considering the heaviness of the themes, and there are some very heavy themes throughout, it manages to be really, really fun, and I enjoyed the whole thing. They fit so much into this first episode. I feel like our podcast could go on for a long time, which it can't. I've got to go to work after this, so
I've got to go to bed.
Let's keep it short. In fact, speaking of keeping it short, I will wrap up quickly. But we've learnt a lot in this episode. We've seen a lot, and we've had so many mysteries sort of sown as well. I like the characters, I like the story, and I like those mysteries. It's been a great setup, a great first episode, and yeah, 5 bloobs for me.
Nice, thanks, Gaz. That's a great start. I'm going to come to you next, John. Tell us, what do you think?
See, this always happens, doesn't it?
The grumpy one.
This always happens, because it's like, oh, look, 5 bloobs, go to McCann to level it out.
I'd already decided the order. That wasn't the plan.
I think you're going to join me, John.
Join us.
See, now, that score surprises me. And I'll tell you why it surprises me. Exposition, dialogue. Something that I know, Gaz, you absolutely hate it when it's like, you know, hey there, how you doing? I've not seen you for 10 years since the Vietnam War. How's your dad? And it's like, he's dead. Remember, he's dead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah. He's dead. Now, the dialogue in this episode. No, it's just an example, yeah? All right, that's episode 3. Now, the dialogue's really bad. It's really bad. Yeah, it's terrible. Now
I can think of one example, and I know exactly. I think I can think of one example that I think maybe is in your head, but I can't think of any others where it's very exposition heavy. Maybe you can enlighten us later, but yeah, I don't know. Carry on.
Yeah. Having said that, look, dialogue aside, I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was. I thought the music was quite cool. I'm not sure I was a massive fan of blending into, you know, modern music. I was kind of like, just stay with the vibe, right? Just stay in that era.
You're an old man.
Yeah.
You hate that modern stuff. What's all this modern garbage?
Kids these days.
No, look, I thought it was a bit slow. As I say, look, I look at it and I go, the actors, pretty good. I'm just a bit... I have some concerns, which is why I'm kind of level-headed at this point. I think, it feels very, very quick. it's got to where it's got to very quick. There's a lot.
Yeah.
So, okay, I've just met these characters and, oh, fucking, what is that? It's like some mad, like, goblin thing. So, who's worse? What is worse, a big monster or racists? Or are they the same? No, they're not, because they've killed the racists. But who really is the bad? No, no, because they
would,
both
who
are.
Who would win in a fight? Who would win in a fight between a racist cop and a...
Oh, he's bit racism's head off.
Hundred-eyed
It's monster. Weird. It's so weird. But having said that, look, I enjoyed it. I'm probably... I'll give it three bloobs because I think first half was kind of a two or a three. The second half was three or a four. So I say a three bloob is it's a fairly it's okay. It's a good episode.
Mm.
All in all, I enjoyed it. I just don't think that episode one for me nowhere near a five bloob. So that's it.
Thanks, John. It's quite interesting watching you say all of that, and because obviously we're on video, and just me and Gaz sitting there going, "What?" So disappointed. Yeah. I'm going to go next.
I'm sad.
Just to even things up.
Save the best till last. Correct.
Male, female, male, female.
I thought you'd gone already.
I wasn't sure what to expect from the first episode because I love the book. I enjoy some of Lovecraftian fiction. I did read a lot of it all in one go, so I will go back to reread some stuff. And it did not disappoint for me. I thought this was spectacular. It was exciting. It was so amazingly shot. I loved the soundtrack. I thought that was really cool. That was one of the things that I really liked about the trailers. The cast is fantastic. And like they fit in a lot of stuff, so I know it's going to move quickly. And that, hopefully it's not a kind of Castle Rock Outsider-esque thing where it ends up halfway through just stopping for like three episodes. But I don't think it will, because there's a lot of content from the original novel that I think they can work with. Really, really enjoyed it. And I watched it twice, which is unusual for me because, you know, time is precious. So I'm going to agree with Gaz. It's five bleeps.
Welcome. Nice. Welcome nice. To...
Welcome to Cthulhu.
The Dark Side.
Go on then, Len. Hit us. What about you?
Different film.
Well, you know, having read the book, or, you know, listened to the audio book, as it were, and I've been on a journey. I feel like I've been on a journey with these characters for like the last month, because I've just been listening to it, taking my time with it and then listening to it. And then seeing it realized in this episode, I loved it, actually. I thought I was just shocked at how bold the decision making was at times, just to go for it. And it's got this like fantastical and dreamlike feel to it. They've gone all in straight off the bat, especially in terms of like gothic horror elements and the sci-fi fantasy. Because in the book, it's a bit more restrained, like the monsters. You don't even really see the monsters, right? Or you don't even see the monster at the start.
They definitely see you.
Certainly not in an audio book anyway.
No, he got the picture book to accompany it.
Oh god, what's that?
It's a policeman.
No, but like honestly, like I think they like, because I know John, you had your concern. Your concern, John, was that there wasn't going to be much mystery in this. And there is still a bit of mystery, but I think they've definitely just gone all in on the sort of like, here, this is supernatural. This is what we're going to be for the whole season. And like you said, in the book, it's like a conversation about what is the real monster, the true monster of America at that time? And I know we're joking about it, but it's at such an interesting storyline that sort of gets weaved throughout the book, and I'm sure will happen this season. And I thought this was like a perfect setup. I love the realization of characters. I agree that the dialogue at times can be a bit heavy-handed, but it's a premiere, like they have to get a lot of information in there, and you'll see why, because there's a lot of material to get through. Like this will end up being a sort of Twilight Zone, X-Files like episodic show. I'm pretty certain of that. So there's going to be some maybe Monster of the Week elements to it. There's going to be some
Monster of the Week.
other bits and pieces that are going on. So they had to get a lot in this first episode. But in terms of delivering something that's suspenseful, makes you care about the characters, very stylized, I thought they did a fantastic job. And I don't think they could have done a better job for a season premiere, knowing the source material. So I'm going to also give it a score of 5 blueberries, yeah, which makes it a very highly sought after and highly regarded premiere.
Nice.
It's not a perfect score because obviously I, in fact, can I change mine to 1? So we level it out a little bit more.
You can't retrospectively change your blueberries. That's not part of the system. That's 18 out of 20 blueberries.
But who's the real monster, yeah?
Yeah.
John McCann.
That
John
police McCann. Officer or John McCann or the thing with this 100 eyes on his back.
Yeah. No, you've already said John McCann.
No, that's hair.
100 oh, hairs.
100 oh, hair right. on my back. Yeah, anyway, carry on.
Right, I'm leaving now. That's it. Someone else knows this. Disgusting. Yeah. New rule for Lovecraft Country Critical. No talk about back hair, please. Unless it's
what was your hair. What was your score, John? Fascinating.
Okay, well, that's interesting because actually I think even the three of us that have given it a full marks, top score, is for different reasons, and I think that's good. And John, you are entitled to your own opinion. And
I enjoyed it. I'm just you know,
I haven't finished.
I like to be taken on a couple of dates before I, you know, give up all my bloobs. So
fair enough.
That's what I'm saying.
Fair enough.
Easy.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Well, before we get into talking about the full plot, I think it might be time for a little advert break.
Hello there, advert time. And thank you for tuning in to Lovecraft Country Critical. We really do appreciate it. And if you are listening, hit the subscribe button. Subscribe right now. Very simple. And if you're listening on any of our other channels, that's right, we want you to subscribe to the main one. So go Lovecraft Country Critical and hit subscribe. Yeah? Alternatively, if you want to hear more exciting things not about Lovecraft Country, we have a whole podcast network here, and everything we do gets posted to the Fan Critical channel. That's Fan Critical. That is on every podcast app, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, etc. Just search Fan Critical, and there you can subscribe, and you will see fantastic series such as our latest How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That, where we review films that we've lied about seeing for years. Some absolute classics in there, like Gladiator, Reservoir Dogs, RoboCop. There's so many good ones.
Right. Armageddon.
We haven't done that one yet. Unbelievable. That's a spoiler warning, isn't it?
That's a spoiler.
There's also our
Lovecraft Country. You've not seen that, have we? What?
There's our also our famous Worst of Netflix series, where Gaz and John trawl the depths and sewers of Netflix to bring you the worst films they can find on there. That is hilarious. Gets a lot of good reception, doesn't it, boys? So,
Carl, what's this? What's this? Lovecraft Country? Oh, rubbish. Zero boobs.
So if you want to do that, check out Fan Critical. Also, just to say, if you do want to sponsor us further, you can go to patreon.com/fancritical. That's patreon.com/fancritical. And on there, you will see several tiers where you can donate some precious monies to us, and you will get access to bonus content. You'll get access to our Discord server. You will get access to talk to us and also commission a podcast if you want to pay us that little
T-shirts.
Bit extra more money, which is something we do here. We have commissioned podcasts. We've done No Country for Old Men. Yeah. Me and Gaz have just done Hereditary. We did Midsommar. You know, it's great to interact with the listeners. And if you want us to talk about something specific, you can go to patreon.com/fancritical and see that option there to do so. That is it for the advert, Emma. Back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Len, for telling everyone about all the stuff that we're doing. Awesome. Right, let's kick off with the plot of episode 1, Sundown. So we open up in this episode with a very strange sci-fi-esque war dream, where there are some aliens. It's a bit of War of the Worlds in there. There's a red-skinned alien.
Better than that.
Hey, can you stop ruining Cthulhu Corner, please? Look, we're going to talk about all the references at the end of the episode, right?
So, come on, Emma,
there's a lot to get through. We don't need this much detail.
My notes are gone.
There's only one bit left. And Jackie Robinson beating a monster's head in. Is that enough? Or, I thought this was an awesome way to open it up. Like, how cool. It was really exciting. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And, you know, is Vietnam turned out to be really strange? Or what year are we in? What did you guys think of the opening?
I think the thing that's interesting about the opening is this is all where all the trailer imagery came from, right? Where everyone was like freaking out, like, oh, Cthulhu's in this and all this sort of shit. And I was like, watching the trailers, I was like, this is all going to be from the first episode or something. And they basically have found a very interesting way to get this idea across that, you know, that Atticus loves reading this pulp, this science fiction, and he loves this sort of genre. And they've also blended that with his actual history of being in the war. So I thought it was an excellent way of getting all of that information across in like a minute at the start of the episode to really set this character up and see what he's about.
Yeah.
And I thought the effects were actually very good.
Yeah,
and
I thought they're awesome.
I think that, this is the sort of thing, like, you see some ropey effects out there these days. but I thought the effects in this whole episode were brilliant. And I thought this was sorry for the pun, like a home run start for the episode.
Oh, you know, hell, honestly. This is where our money's going from Patreon, script writers, King L.
Terrible.
I thought it was a bit of a curveball.
Oh, Lord almighty.
Struck out. Yeah?
Yeah, I couldn't think of anything. Well, it's interesting because you've got this sci-fi dream thing, which is then immediately juxtaposed with
baseball.
Reality. No, not baseball, reality. So Atticus is on a bus. He's sitting with another older black
bases
woman. They're in the rear because obviously it's a segregated bus. It breaks down. Yeah. All the white people get in a truck and get ferried off, and he has to go walking, which gives him an opportunity to chat to this nice little old lady and tell her that he's a veteran. He loves science fiction, and his dad's gone missing. Mm-hmm. So we've got everything all in one there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a weird one, isn't it? I mean, you go from some sort of fucking Guardians of the Galaxy style. I mean, it's like a fucking red alien woman or something, and then there's a baseball player. Yeah. You've got War of the Worlds and all this shit, and it's like, fucking hell, what is going on here? I mean, I knew it was a dream, but also, this is 30 seconds in. I've started watching it. I'm watching it actually on my laptop with my headphones on. Michelle turns and looks at what I'm watching, and he's like, "What the fuck is that?" And I'm like, yeah. And then like 60 seconds later, 60 seconds later, it's like the Green Book or something. And it's like, fucking hell, this is all over the place. But yeah, it's, I just think hide it a little bit. Just hide it. You know, I prefer it to be, I remember years ago watching From Dusk Till Dawn. And it's like you just feel like you're watching some sort of thriller. And then suddenly Salma Hayek's a fucking vampire. And I'm like, whoa, what have I missed here? I don't remember this being the film. And I like that. And it's kind of, they've just gone, oh, do you know what? It's just going to be fucking weird stuff. And I also want to know who this red alien woman is, because she's obviously, she's going to come back, isn't she? It's not just a dream. Yeah. Mm. Yeah? Is that,
definitely.
Is that a spoiler warning? Or?
Yeah.
So,
spoiler warning. She's so one of the main characters,
So it's just a bit weird. It's just a bit of a weird start, but I was fascinated. And yeah, you're right. It was a smart way to kind of fuse his backstory with his love for comics. It's not like he just went, God, so I was just in Vietnam. And I'll tell you what got me through, these bloody comic books that I've been reading for 15 years. So at least that didn't happen. But yeah, look, it was all right.
Tell you what, though, some people didn't do comic books. They just wrote regular books like H.P. Lovecraft, who I also enjoy reading.
I will say before we go any further, it's Korea. That he served in, not Vietnam.
Korea.
Korea.
No, I know. I was correcting myself. Yeah, sorry.
Well, Emma said it earlier, and that's what done it.
Yeah, that's what done it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was me. I'm an idiot. I'm a hack.
You fucking read the book as well.
I don't know.
Hack.
I forget places. Anyway, moving on. So, great. Opening, fantastic. Then eventually, Atticus arrives at the apartment to meet with his Uncle George, Aunt Hippolyta, and his cousin Diana. Prior to that, bit of a weird sexy scene. Not going to talk about Courtney B. Vance doing a bit of fingering. That's rank.
So I've got that image in there.
Yeah. So Uncle George, you mentioned this, John, is responsible for a Green Book-esque publication called The Safe Negro Travel Guide, where he basically goes around and reviews places to direct black travellers to places where they'll be welcome and safe. So this opens up the conversation about Atticus's missing dad, Montrose, and that he's been missing for a couple of weeks. So we're getting straight into this. There's no preamble here whatsoever. Gaz, what did you think about meeting George, Hippolyta, I mean, and Diana?
Hippolyta.
I will say this quickly, Gaz. Hippolyta, in the audiobook, she was called Hippolyta, and I was pretty certain from also reading stuff about this character that she was called Hippolyta. Interesting to me that they've gone with Hippolyta. It sounds like such a weird way to say the name.
Yeah, it's like a lighter, like a shaped like a
Zippo lighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, actually, Len, but I've gone with the pronunciation from the show for continuity for our listeners.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Continue, guys.
A broader point is the characters are really likable, I think, and these three are no different. They seem like a lovely couple, George and Hippolyta.
How did you get that? Was that before or after the fingering?
It was during. It was mostly during.
Yeah. Oh, look, what a good couple they are.
Yeah, they're doing well.
Sorry, is that the barometer for a good couple these days? Is that the barometer? Is that the test?
No, apparently
that,
no, like, yeah. You know,
well, you got, what don't you think?
That's like, second base, is that second base?
Isn't that third?
We're going back to, is it third base? We're going back to baseball. So. This whole thing is just baseball. Honestly, it's madness.
I think it's fine. I think that's lovely. They're not an old couple, but they're.
I didn't ask you to focus on that bit.
It's great that they're keeping the spark alive.
But you are right, Gaz. They're very likeable, aren't they? Like as characters, they are, everyone, you warm to them very quickly, don't you?
Yeah. Unfortunately, their daughter has to hear it, which is not great. But yeah. I do.
Oh, not again.
She's.
Right.
I loved it actually. At first, when she's sort of doing her little drawings, keep up the doodling, and she kind of hears the noises. She hears the noises and kind of she looks up, and the way that she looked up, I was like, oh, she doesn't understand what's going on here. She looked confused by it, and I thought, I wonder, like, if she sort of. Is that giving us a hint as to her character? But then she just goes, gross, and walks off. I was like, oh, yeah, no, just a normal teenage girl hearing her parents have sex upstairs. But her comics, they're cool as well. I love that. I want to be part of that family in a way.
I bet you do, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, upstairs.
So after we meet everyone, which is lovely, then we start talking about the letter that Montrose has sent to Atticus, where he essentially says, just to clarify, Atticus is called Tick in this.
Yeah, they've
that's his nickname, yeah.
Yeah.
Did they ever actually say he's called Atticus, or did they just...
Yes, they do.
Tick?
Mm. Tick. George calls him Atticus.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a conversation about this letter where Montrose says that he's tracked down Atticus's dead mum's lineage, which is a subject with which he's long been obsessed, apparently. And it's got some really odd things in the letter. So, you know, he talks about the past being a living thing and that Atticus has a secret legacy, a birthright that's been kept from you. And one of Atticus's concerns is that he mentions... Arkham is the place that he's at.
Yeah.
That's not a real place, is it? That's from Lovecraft, mate. But luckily it turns out actually it's Arkham rather than Arkham. And they make plans to leave for Arkham, Massachusetts the following day. I mean, Len, for you, having read the book, did you enjoy this bit?
Yeah, I did enjoy it. I mean, George is one of my favourite characters in the book. And I think he's brilliantly realised in this first episode. We'll talk about it in Cthulhu Corner, but like when Atticus picks up the Lovecraft book, outside The Outsider and Others, that book looks awesome. I really want that book. And there'll be a little bit of trivia for you later on in Cthulhu Corner as to the value of that copy of the book. So I love this little scene. And I love the fact that they call it, it's in Lovecraft country, but it's not really. It's just a place called Arkham. But in the book, they do also say that this is still technically Lovecraft country that they're going to. So even though it's not Arkham and it is Arkham. But yeah, great scene.
Yeah, definitely. And then we've already sort of met her, but we get into the actual kind of real plot. Letitia Lewis. Brilliant.
Letitia Lewis. Letitia Danvers in the book, I believe. But
Letitia and Ruby Danvers.
Yeah. The realisation of these two characters, I think Letitia's pretty spot on. Ruby really took me by surprise the way that the direction they've gone in with this character.
It's really interesting because their relationship seemed very similar, but Ruby was very different to what she was like in the book. But I mean, John, 100%. From a total like non-book perspective, because you can't read, what did you think of Letitia?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read the book, but... You know, it was nowhere near like her character in the book, was it? Do you know what I mean? Terrible. little sing song on stage. Love that. Mm. That was fucking great.
That was really good.
It was cool. I was a bit confused when they said they were sisters. I was like, hey? Yeah, but other than that, and also their little fucking tiff on stage where it's like, I mean, come on, just be normal now and then later on say, look, we don't get along. Right? Remember that thing that happened a couple of weeks ago? Bloody mum's funeral. You didn't even fucking turn up to it. Oh, all right. And then later on, it's like, oh, you didn't even turn up to mum's funeral. So, okay, stop stressing me out, all right? Look, it's only mum's funeral. Chill out. So,
it's not like only happens once in a lifetime.
But I liked it. I thought the whole thing in the street was cool. Nice little
I think
block party.
I think the block party and the sort of realization of sort of 1950s Chicago and this community there is, I thought it was amazing. Like I thought the, like sometimes you see some of these things, like these sort of period dramas as it were, and the cost, you just see straight through everything and the costumes. And I thought this was brilliantly realized.
It's so beautifully styled.
And I thought the stylizing of the whole episode was amazing.
Obviously, you had the kids playing in the iconic
hydrant,
fire hydrant, the water. So he comes on, going, no, turn the water off.
No like, water.
No more no fun. Water. Fun's cancelled today. And he goes off and everyone's like, oh, what? He's turned the fun off. And then obviously he's like, oh, hold on. Is he gone? This is a block party. Go get the wrench.
Yeah. Yep.
Goes out.
Fire hydrant. On.
Fun's
shirt
back
off.
On. Fun's on here. And those two sisters that hate each other are on stage singing. You know, this life's good. Life's bloody good. It was good, wasn't it?
Good.
Very good. Very life, cliched. But it was fine.
Life gets a bit worse, unfortunately, because Letitia decides to join George and Atticus on their journey to Arkham, Massachusetts, because she wants to go and see her brother, which is on the way. And they don't have a great journey. So
right.
I'm going to give
just before just before that journey, ooh, I'm going to make a confession. There's about 2 minutes where I zoned out and then suddenly they're all in the car. And I was like, when did they talk to one another?
That's basically all that happened.
That's what turned it into a 5 for us, John, that 2 minutes. So
yeah, that was the best bit.
I've heard you say that before, Len, yeah.
I think the thing is there, like obviously Letitia and Atticus haven't seen each other since they were kids. And Letitia's obviously very surprised about how Atticus has turned out to be this big, strong, imposing
sort of figure. I remember that bit. I remember her talking to her sister going, isn't that the little nerdy guy that used to wear the glasses?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Why would you say that to me? Why would you say that to me? That's just a memory that we share. I was just having a go at you about the mum and the funeral. Why? The exposition is ridiculous. So is that the guy with the glasses in there? Remember 18 years ago? Oh, mate, honestly. Anyway, carry on.
Well, they're family friends. But
you also have a very interesting moment where the daughter gives George, for the road trip, the latest copy of her comic, which is no longer Panther Man and is now Orithia Blue and her Cosmic Tales. So that will be interesting later on in the series for sure. So keep an eye on that one.
I've got a little fact for Cthulhu Corner about that, if you haven't, Len.
He's going to kick off, isn't he?
Yeah, 100%. I'll text it to you so you can add it in yourself. No, really good points. And I think there's a lot of little things that happen in this episode. We'd be here for hours if we talked about all of them. And you know, some of them will be important. So do bring them up if you want to raise them. But if I skip over them, please don't be offended.
Well, I was just going to say in that 2 minutes that John missed, it turns out that Letitia was part of Atticus's little nerd group, from the sounds of things.
Oh yeah.
He's like, oh well, you know, you were the only female member of the
nerdy
science fiction.
Why would you say that, though?
Reader. Yeah, so that was the bit of dialogue that I thought you meant
imagine
exposition, and you missed it. So
imagine that.
Obviously not.
Imagine me bumping into one of you in like 5 years' time and going, "Hey, do you remember when we were a part of that podcast? Why are you talking to me like this? Is this on film or like, are you wearing a wire?
Camera.
Are you wearing a wire?
Oh, remember all that money that we got?
They do have a terrible journey, and it just all goes pretty badly. So I'm going to give you a really brief rundown of it, and then we can talk about how we felt about it. So George suggests that they stop at this particular town where 6 months or so ago there was a really good recommendation for someone's diner, and they're like, oh, we'll go and check it out. And they drive into town. It's not looking good. They walk into the diner. It all gets a bit weird. Letitia goes to the toilet, then comes running out being like, get the fuck out of here, because they're all massive racists. One of the big reasons being the walls are painted white, because that's good for covering up burns. And then they get chased out of town by a load of shooting racist idiots. And it's terrifying. They are somehow managed to be saved from this chase, A, by Letitia's mad batshit driving, and B, by some very fancy looking silver car that pulls in between them, stops the fire truck with all the racist men in it with guns, and some very attractive fancy blonde woman steps out of it. Okay, that is our first very uncomfortable experience of weird shit and horrible shit happening.
What you also have is that whole montage is offset with a very famous speech. I can't remember.
James Baldwin.
Right, yeah. And I thought that was a brilliant editorial decision, and I love the sequence in terms of the way it's structured. Like, you see them stopping off at random points, obviously, and just there's moments in the book there, but they just use them in a sort of montage sort of sequence. And then this culminates in the fire brigade chase or whatever it is. And I thought that was brilliantly done as well.
Come back,
and
you're on fire. We're trying to put the fire out on the back of your car.
The fire out. There's two chase scenes in this episode, and I thought they were both excellent. I thought this whole sequence was amazing, to be honest with you, and really sets the tone for this sort of road trip that they're on. It's great stuff.
It's a really this is a really big part of the book, I think, in its impact. So it was really important that these particular scenes hit home well, and I think they did. Mm-hmm. Like, even though I knew what was happening and I knew they were going to get out of it and I knew how it was going to end, I was still right on the edge of my seat both times I watched it, and I think it was shot fantastically. And you're right, that montage is great, because it's A, you've got this fantastic speech happening in the background. B, there's some really happy scenes, but there's also some really awkward shit in there, like a guy pretending to be a monkey because, you know,
it's
racism.
Yeah.
He was such a pussy as well. Like,
the monkey guy.
Worm.
Yeah, it was like just tiny, like, loser of a guy. Like, because he's ripped.
Yeah.
Like, what's he doing? Are you mental? Thinking? Like, Fucking yeah. hell.
And Atticus is quite like that. Like he's quite measured. Like a lot of times he sort of pulls wow. himself back from confrontation.
Letitia had to pull him back.
But he sort of does it as well in his own mind, like in the book. So he's quite a measured person. Like he sees the benefit of only getting into confrontation when necessary. And obviously he did not deem that guy necessary. Let's be honest.
Right. Well, for some levity in that scene. So, it was fine. I didn't feel like I'd watched anything that I'd not seen before. Like it just felt
really.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like the why would you have white paint and then the reveal of covering, you know, a burnt building. Like, oh yeah, that's quite cool. Mm-hmm. I feel like that probably could have been revealed a little bit better than just why would you. It was like very like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it was like, let me just kick this floor. And like, oh, what's going on? It's too quick. Like, all right, when she runs out, I was like, all right, I quite like that. The chase was fine. The chase later on is way better. That to me was different, and we'll talk about that in a bit and what as to why that chase is different. But it just didn't feel original. And again, I mean, we're talking about a book that was written, what, like 4 years ago? Something like that, is that right?
Yeah, 2016.
Yep. Yeah, so it's kind of like, I'd give it a pass if it was based on a book that was written like 40 years ago. But it's kind of, I just looked at it and just thought, it's just a bit cliched. But again, it's fine. And they're obviously using it to set the scene and it's episode one. So it's all right, fine. If it had dragged out over 6 episodes, I'd be a bit like, fucking hell, this is just... I feel like I've seen this before. I feel like I've sat and watched and felt uncomfortable seeing this stuff before. It didn't feel particularly clever to me, which is
Gaz,
fine.
What about you, Gaz?
I loved it. I loved this scene. Just a little bit of trivia on that speech, because I sort of read up on it last night afterwards. But it actually happened, I think. So I think the show's set in 1955 specifically, and... The speech happened 10 years later. So it's actually a speech that hasn't happened yet in the book or show world.
That's interesting.
So it's quite cool. I guess what it's doing is that speech is, you know, that speech is of its time. It is talking about what's happened leading up to that point, isn't it? So, you know, experiences like the one that they're having with the moment contribute that speech. So, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, so we have a bit of an interlude on their journey after this because they stop at Letitia's brother's house. They don't really talk much about exactly what happened, but they speak with him and they've asked him to do a bit of research about Arden to find out about it, because it's not on any maps anywhere and it's all a bit elusive. So essentially it turns out it was founded by a load of witch hunters. They don't really like outsiders, and the county sheriff is a horrible, horrible man.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what's interesting about this, and it's something that I think is also like, these characters are so good at doing, and you'll probably see more of it throughout the season, but they brush off these like near death experiences like they're nothing to them. And that just goes to show like how strong characters they are, because they had this
or how much shit they just have to deal with all the time.
People have just, they've just had a gun like fired at them like 10 times, the windows shot out, like running for their lives, and then they're all just sitting laughing around a table like, oh yeah, that's what we were expecting was going to happen.
Okay.
And it shows how strong the characters are. You'll see more instances of this throughout the season, I'm sure, where they just sort of like brush it off and keep going.
See,
you know?
Okay, but I mean, that would be fine, because it's like they're so used to that sort of treatment. You know, it's such a piss poor world that they live in that they just brush it off as nothing. So yeah, I understand that. I don't know, when there's a silver car that turns up and then there's like a magic flip, I'd be a bit like, that's definitely that is different.
That's worth talking
about later over dinner. Like, that annoyed me a little bit. Because it's like, if a dinosaur had come in and just killed everyone, they wouldn't be like, yeah, well, you know, it's one of them things.
I think at this point they're in a little bit of disbelief and sort of not sure what they saw, kind of thing. But obviously by the end of the episode, they're fully clued in on, okay, something's going on here.
I think John has a point though. Like, if you weren't sure, you'd be like, what the fuck actually happened when that car crashed? Because I don't think it hit the car.
It's mad.
Like, you would talk about that. Mm. You would talk. You wouldn't just be like, not sure. Anyway, these potatoes are lovely. Like, yeah.
They then leave, and things don't get any easier on this journey. And we finally get to the part of the episode where I understand the title of the episode. Because often when you watch something, you look for the title of it. Or when you read something, you look for the title of it in the thing, don't you?
We're not having this conversation again, are we?
We fucking are, yeah. No, we're not. But essentially what happens is they find themselves in a sundown county.
Devon County, yeah.
Which is particularly unpleasant. If you're still here after sundown, I can lynch you. Mm. It's essentially what the horrific sheriff says. And this is where we get to, you know, the second chase.
But, you know.
I am. Yeah. I don't really want to repeat him verbatim, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
They've pulled over, they've got lost in the woods, he turns up, he's an absolute fucking knobber. And then there was a race to get out of the county by sundown.
Yeah.
Gaz, what did you think of this kind of second hiccup on their...
That feels like you're underplaying it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean to.
Yeah, we've had a bit of a hiccup today.
What, gas ran out? No. It's worse than that.
It was excellent. Because what I loved about this was Atticus and Letty sort of standing by the forest talking about the monsters that could be in there. Sort of Atticus is just referencing some Lovecraftian
the Shoggoth
monsters, the Shoggoth, and he's describing how horrific it is, and you know, it's just a big lump with loads of eyes, and
I'd be mad if that made up thing turned up, wouldn't it? Yeah, well, they're made up. Don't worry about it. It'd be absolutely fine.
No, but
they're definitely not turning up in 10 minutes. It's fine.
maybe this would be too on the nose for someone like John, but I loved that whilst they're talking about that, that's when the policeman turns up. That's when the sheriff rolls in the background. So it's pretty cool. You know, you're thinking about these monsters, these fictional monsters in the woods. Well, look out for the real monsters behind you.
Well, I'll tell you what would have been good though, if like when he turns up in his car, let's say like he brakes vigorously and the noise of the car, they kind of, the sound editing is they mix it in and it sort of sounds like monstrous.
Yeah, that would have been quite good.
Yeah. Well, see, there you go. So that would take up 4 bloobs. So that's what I'm saying.
Right, John.
That's what I'm saying.
We'll get you direct into season 2.
I'll be in touch.
Watching him chase them out at sundown, you know, they can't speed because he'll pull them over. They've got to get over the county line. He's ramming into the back
of
them.
It's amazing.
The tension was incredible.
Slow-paced chase scene.
Yeah, this is a great, like John's right, this chase is better. Because it's got so many different elements to it. The sun going down, that's the real race, and then they're only going like 25 kilometers an hour, and
that's
like
real
as fast as cars can go.
He has to ask, is it legal for me to do a U-turn in this road? Like, there's all that sort of element to it, like just every sort of loophole possible to try and basically kill these guys, and it's just horrific.
Yeah,
and then you know. Luckily, Tick, you know, sort of quite very smart and knows that traveling, that they might not be able to do a U-turn and they have to go the speed limit, otherwise they get pulled over. It's just so good. Like, this whole scene is so tense and horrible. And it's the same in the book. Seeing it realised like this was great. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was the bit where I was like, I could give the episode 4 bloobs. This is good stuff. This is excellent stuff, actually. And a lot of this is like, how many times would you ever see a chase? I mean, you very rarely see 2 chases in one episode, but whatever.
Yeah.
But this chase, it's like, it's a slow chase. It's like, you've got a race against nature. Maybe there's a whole nature versus nurture here. I don't know. With the policeman 100%, being the nurture and stuff, but you know, I haven't looked that deep into it. Yeah. But if I had done, that is what is. Excellent. So good. You know,
it's like the opposite of speed, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, slow. Yeah. Don't name it that, though. I'd never heard
that,
of the...
That was the other name for the episode.
But this, again, like historical pretext, I'd never heard of sundown towns. And again, we go back to Watchmen. Yeah, spoiler warnings there, but there's stuff that happens in that I'm like, fucking hell, this is awful, and it was a real historical event. But yeah, like it's mental. But again, this bit, everything about it, the build up, the dialogue, good dialogue. Yeah, very good. Yeah, brilliant.
I can't go any faster.
Yeah, go on, just get past that bit. Is that a mad goblin that just ran past? Don't worry about that. Just come on, just focus.
Not got time for that. Just keep driving forward.
Just get over the train tracks.
The train as well. You can hear the train. Like it sounds like a train's coming.
If they'd have edited in like a monstrous howling with the train as well, you'd be like, "Oh, what is that? Is that oh no, it's a train." So yeah, do that next time.
Oh, good God! I can't remember what I was going to say now. That's great. But yeah, I mean, this is what we were saying before about like how as an HBO production, this should be a spectacular piece of television. And that's that set of scenes, that chase, that slow-mo chase is exactly why we had that hope, because this is what HBO does really well, is really good set pieces. It's totally different. And it was brilliant. And it's that feeling when they get over the train tracks and you think, yes, they've made it. And then all hell lets loose again because there's a roadblock. And they've decided that Atticus, George and Letitia are responsible for a string of robberies, obviously, because, they're not from town and they're not like everyone else from town.
So this is, once again, like, it's that idea of repetition. Like John said, you've had two chases in this episode. They've been pulled over like three times, essentially. Do you know what I mean? In this one episode, and they only went on the road trip like 40 minutes into the episode, right? So you're trying to get this idea that literally going anywhere for them is literally impossible without having any form of sort of confrontation.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the game is rigged, isn't it? The game's rigged.
The game is rigged.
Yeah.
The game is rigged.
Except you don't expect it to be rigged by a giant blob with hundreds of eyes. That's when shit gets fucking weird.
So them literally being taken out into the woods now is essentially their death warrant, right? And it's interesting because obviously you can tell from the previous car chase that somebody is on their side and somebody is helping them. And then this is the thing that got me about this whole episode is I was expecting them to sort of mirror what they do in the book, which is take this back a bit and make it more of like the people aren't really sure about what they saw, and keep it sort of a bit more in the shadows. But nope, they don't do that here. They just go, hey guys, fucking monster vampire creatures, and they're gonna rip. The gore level is amazing.
They were like
the
demogorgons.
Elements are amazing. It's amazing, man. The blood everywhere. I was like, this is brilliant.
How fucking shit this scary was it as well? Like, I knew it was happening, and I knew what was coming, and it still had me jumping. And it was like, they almost immediately eat like two of the sheriff's men. And then an arm falls down with a flashlight in it, and George is on the floor, and everyone's running, and it was just like, fuck that, thanks.
Mm. Whoa, calm down.
Huh?
What are you doing?
That lady in the silver car.
Why is this happening? This is too far. Yeah.
The noises that they make are terrifying as well when you hear them in the forest.
I mean, Gaz, you're a big Lovecraft fan, right? So this kind of stuff must be right up your alley.
Just to specify, I'm a big Lovecraft fiction fan.
Yes,
not
sorry.
A fan of Lovecraft the person.
That's what I mean.
Because we've discussed this at in length. The preview podcast that he is a horrible racist. But yes.
Yeah. Bad man, but could write. And actually that's kind of referenced
earlier
in the show. Atticus says, like, you know, just loving the art isn't like you love things even though they're imperfect.
Yeah, and that's a very good line. Yeah, that's a very good line. It's taken from the book. It's, I think George says something like, you know, books are like people. Sometimes they let you down. Like that is just,
yeah.
No, I love that.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
That's right at the beginning. It's really clever, and that's correct.
You know, Atticus says it in the show, doesn't he?
Yeah,
yeah.
Lovecraft writes some lovely stuff, but as a person, he's really let us all down.
Yeah, and that is the actual dialogue from the show. Look, H.P. Lovecraft is an awful racist man, but if in like 100 years' time they make a TV series out of it, don't worry about it, yeah? So that's... Yeah. What's TV? Yeah, so there you go.
Good point.
Yeah.
With Lovecraft, he does obviously have some seriously, seriously fucked up monsters in his his literature. And he describes those monsters in great detail. So what I'm about to say might sound slightly contradictory. But what he also does, though, is I think that his best work is the stuff that is about kind of forbidden knowledge and knowing that there's something deeply disturbing and sort of incomprehensible out there, rather than the stuff that's like, raw, big monster.
And like the things about science and going too far, and like Herbert West is an example of that. That I love.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly, and like, and knowledge causing madness, and for me, although I really liked what was happening here from a totally different perspective, it isn't Lovecraftian in that sense for me. And I could have done with the reveal being delayed and hinted at, personally.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, it is what it is.
Well,
what are your thoughts?
They kind of work out that they're, you know, these particular creatures don't seem to like light, bits like vampires. So not to mention the fact that the sheriff's had half of his shoulder bitten off. This is horrible. So they've taken shelter in a house somewhere, in the middle of the woods, and eventually there is an argument and a decision made in which Letitia is told to run to the car, get the headlights on and get back. But damn, did she run. Like, that was, but you could, feel the fear in her. Like, you could feel her terror. It was
amazing. I'll tell you what's lucky is that, like, pretty much this entire journey, she's been wearing these, like, high heels. And then this day, she decides to wear flats. Lucky.
Yeah. She's needed flats all day, to be honest. There's been a lot of running happening.
The moment in this sequence where, like, the metamorphosis happens of the sheriff, or whatever, he starts turning into the vampire. The effects are incredible.
So
like,
rank.
I was watching this going, this is so good. This is proper horror stuff. I mean, this, you know, as I said, it's not like this in the book, but I was just like, Jesus, this is brilliant. This is amazing. They're just going, it's like they're having so much fun with this sequence, and I really appreciate that, because they could have just been so tepid with it, and they've just gone, nah, we're going 100 miles an hour.
It sounds to me like, just based on the point that I brought up earlier, Len, that you sort of disagree with that. You're glad that they went all out with it rather than keeping something back. And
I think this show's not going to work. I think personally this show isn't going to work as being something different and interesting if it just goes on the let's taper it back a little bit and let's have a little bit of mystery here. They have to just go for it, because you'll see in episode two and even episode three, there's going to be things where you're like, well, that's now they've done this, that when they show you stuff in episode two and three, you're going to go, okay, that's fine, because they've said from the start, this is what the show is going to be. If they just had this like, is there something? And then episode three, you're like, what the fuck?
I think there are so many other things in this story, if they follow the story that we've read, that are almost more terrifying than a giant blob with eyes, because they are more human. But no, I thought for me, I'm not usually a big fan of like big, gory, in your face stuff, but I thought this was great. It was exciting. And I think because of the trailers, I thought it was great. And now that that's happened, Letitia's back, she's got some flares, and her and Atticus are outside
Like, how'd you run in there?
Basically. Running flares, fuck's sake. That's a different decade, mate. That is Vietnam. Mm.
That's what it's famous for.
They're basically lighting the whole place up. And then eventually all of the weird, horrible Demogorgon monsters, like, fuck off. And there's this weird noise.
Well, you get a phone call, don't they?
call it off guys
hey, like, don't get
off.
That
no
yeah, yeah, don't get that off.
And what they don't realize is that the giant blobby eye monster's there, which I thought was quite cool in the background. But we get to the kind of final scene, so it's next morning, the three of them are bloody and like fucked up, and they walk to Arden. And so they finally found the place. I don't know how, I'm not going to ask. And they get to this huge estate. That silver car's in the driveway. And then this guy opens the door, blonde haired, blue eyed. And he says, ah, Atticus, welcome home. And that's mm-hmm. where we end.
Mr. Freeman, yeah.
We've been expecting you.
Yes.
And he's like, why? And he goes, no, save that for next episode. And that's it. And then it ends.
I liked it. Like, I like that. I like that kind of.
He looks a bit shit, though, doesn't he?
He looks a little bit Umbrella Academy.
Do you know I will say this: I'm hoping that he is a certain character and not another character.
I see.
Yes. Oh, and I hope that next week
you're hoping he's the sister.
Anyway, I'll put a pin in it. I'll come back to it next week.
No, I agree with you then, though. On that front, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. But I will say that I love the idea of them just having this horrible ordeal, and it's like something out of like a horror movie that's hilarious, you know, that's got funny undertones to it. They just stroll up to this pristine gardened mansion covered in blood, like tattered on death's door. And then, you know, he's like, oh yeah, we've been expecting you. It's just, I love it. It's very Jordan Peele.
What are you doing here?
This is a very Jordan Peele sort of moment. And I really enjoyed it.
And I think if you don't know what happens in the book, that line of welcome home, you're like, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Like, what? I mean, I say that. Mm. I mean, guys, is that true? Or what did you think?
He might just be a friendly guy. Let's say, look, you know. Okay.
Yeah.
Mi casa, su casa.
My home is your home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, I used to live here, did I? No. I'm just...
No.
You're a guest. You know, that's what we do.
Okay. All are welcome.
Yeah. And I imagine the butler's there. He's like he's got a human body, but like a crocodile head. And then he speaks like perfect English. Welcome.
Well, that's why we're worrying that he's like this blonde guy is the butler that's supposed to have a crocodile head. Yeah. Exactly. Bad characterization.
Imagine that.
That's what we're concerned about.
And that's where we leave it. But hopefully that leaves us all pretty excited for the second episode to find out what happens and why he's being welcomed.
Well, I can't wait
home.
To meet Staffy. Yeah.
And Snappy's going to turn up too, so brilliant. Speaking of Snappy, I reckon it might be time to hand over to Len for Cthulhu Corner.
Yes, hello, thank you, and welcome to the inaugural Cthulhu Corner. And this is a thing that I'm making compulsory that we all have to, once I say all hail Cthulhu, you all have to say all hail Cthulhu, all right? So, all hail Cthulhu. Good, participation high, yeah, 100%. Right, so this is the section of the podcast where we list all the references and delicious little Easter eggs contained in the episode. Mm. And seeing as I've read the book and so has Emma, we're also going to detail any changes that the show has made specific to that episode. And then I'll let you decide whether they were for better or for worse. But let's kick things off with that amazing dream sequence that we started the episode with. Emma's already ruined this, so fucking unbelievable.
Alien.
Look, maybe you should tell me what's in Cthulhu Corner, and then I won't ruin it for you.
But imagine not mentioning that at the beginning. So basically, he's on a bus, and what about the...
There's a dream sequence and then some racism. Move on.
Yeah. That's just the whole episode.
So we have... So we have a voiceover, and the voiceover says, "This is the story of a boy and his dream, but more than that, it is the story of an American boy and a dream that is truly American." And that is from the Jackie Robinson story, which is the 1950 biographical film of Jackie Robinson.
Gaz yawning immediately at the beginning of Cthulhu Corner. Love it. Amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's good. That.
And it's basically about Robinson's struggle with abusive bigots as he tries to become the first African American Major League Baseball player of the modern era. And this is obviously, this whole sequence is so well meshed together because you've got all of the references to the pulp and science fiction that Atticus loves. So you've got HG's War of the Worlds, we see the tripods. John, you mentioned the lovely red lady. That is, of course, mentioned straight at the start of the book that he's currently reading, A Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs, which is obviously, people might recognize this reference from the terrible and massive failure of a movie, John Carter.
Johnny Carter.
I've put in my notes Jesse. Here, have any of you actually seen that film?
No.
No, neither have I. It's mad. That's how
bad the fuck have you not seen that? Seen it. Yeah?
No.
Yeah, it was shit and nobody's seen it.
That could be a worst of Netflix, so probably. So basically, this character coming down is probably Deia Thoris, is the red-skinned princess. She's John Carter's love interest, right? And it's worth noting that in the Barsoom series, which is the John Carter series, there is a hierarchy among like different alien races to do with skin colour. So it's obviously very poignant.
Also,
towards
I in no way ruined the Cthulhu Corner. The
no, I said, no, you haven't. Don't worry, there's loads.
Fucking yeah, ruining it now, though, isn't it? Let him finish.
Yeah, let him finish. I've started till I finish. Obviously, I'm going to talk about the sort of Cthulhu-like creature because it's interesting because this is obviously not Cthulhu. There's a lot of speculation on Reddit that this is actually a Shoggoth. It seems to be that people think that this is the Shoggoth and actually the creatures at the end are not Shoggoths. And, you know, these cosmic horror shape-shifting beasts, which is what I know what Gaz loves, they are seen in at the Mountains of Madness, which we've referenced already. And they're like sentient fleshy blobs with like tentacles and loads of eyes, and they're servants of a race called the Elder Things, and that's very prevalent throughout Lovecraft's literature.
It's hard work, isn't it?
This higher alien life form, and Shoggoths are like depicted as having these squid like tentacles, and they're basically slaves to the Elder Things. So there's also a little bit of you know, narrative through line with those characters as well. And of course, the UFOs, which around this time, obviously like 1947, was the Roswell UFO incident. So Atticus obviously loves his science fiction. I'm sure he's fully, this is 1954, 1955, I believe. So he's fully aware of the Roswell incident, which is why he pictures the sort of UFOs.
Well, when was War of the Worlds written?
It was radio broadcast, wasn't it?
1951?
Yeah, so he would have read that, surely. H.G. Wells.
Listened, yeah. Yeah, radio broadcast,
exactly. That's why the tripods are there. So this was a little bit of trivia. So later we see Atticus picking up a copy of The Outsider and Others, a hardback copy with its amazing sleeve. How much do you think that book is worth today?
$100.
Depends, though.
Interesting.
Doesn't it?
Is it US dollars, please? Yeah.
Well, what during last Black Friday on Amazon?
No, right, okay. Just a regular day.
Just a regular day.
Don't know if they did regular discounts day. On regular days. I'm going to say $12,500.
Interesting. Emma?
How many copies of that particular...
I don't fucking know. Just give me a fucking number.
Well, I was gonna guess 12,500, so I'm gonna go for 12,750.
What do you mean you were gonna guess 12,500? That is garbage.
Oh, 100%
that
was.
Is garbage.
Oh, I was gonna say 12,500.
Right. Well, Gareth's the closest. It's $120. No, I'm joking. It's $7,000.
Really? I mean, that's amazing.
$7,000.
That is with the discount.
I mean, if you've got that copy, maybe go on the Antiques Roadshow or something. I don't know. That's a show here in England. Don't know if they've got it in America. Probably not.
Do you know what the story of The Outsider is about?
We covered it in Castle Rock Critical. It was the other HBO show that we did. No.
different.
No, go on,
story.
Gareth. Gareth, I will permit you. Cthulhu has sent down some sort of madness to me and said that you're allowed to say something.
How about in Cthulhu Corner, we've got space for a Lovecraft lounge where I'll just sit and tell you a quick Lovecraftian story. Yeah.
Cthulhu's now saying shut up and just say what you're going to say.
So it's about, I don't want to spoil it, but it is a very short story, so it's hard not to. But it's about somebody who lives in total isolation, isn't a part of society, and one day decides to leave their sort of their isolation. And as they're walking and discovering the world around them, they find this party that they are not invited to. They go in to the party, and everybody is terrified and runs off like screaming and howling.
Oh, God.
I think I'll stop there because it's a very short read, but it's great.
Sounds good. Sounds like a Twilight Zone episode.
It's excellent. And it is. Yeah, it is. It is Twilight Zone.
And that's the end. It's the end of the thing. They all run off. He never knows why. Neither do you. So, because he wasn't wearing a mask.
This is good. This is good for us Brits, because I think, you know, we're quite far removed from this show in a way, because it's obviously all happening in America and we're British. But
We're
British. But I thought what was very cool in this episode is they do mention a town in England, guys. A town in England, which is obviously why this place in Devon County, what they're trying to go to with Arden, is named after. Do you remember the town?
Bradford.
No, that'd be terrible.
They literally do mention Bradford, just by the way. But
do they? It's Biddeford. Biddeford.
Oh, I've been to Biddeford.
I've been to Biddeford. It's actually quite lovely. So
do they get,
it's in Devon.
Do they pronounce
lovely
it
sort
correctly?
Of coastal area. Yeah, they do. They say Biddeford, yeah.
So it's not like they go like Leicester.
Bideford.
Leicester.
Hey, it's named after this town, Bideford, in England.
London.
So they say in the episode that it was the site of a 1682 witch trial, and that's true. And the supposed witch, she had sex with the devil while he was in the shape of a black man, and three women were hanged. So, you know, all I'll say is, if you're a tourist, and it's very hard to be a tourist these days because of COVID and everything, but if you ever want to come to England, go check out Bideford. It's lovely this time of year.
And don't forget to quarantine and wear a mask.
Yeah. Go check out Biddeford,
Check out Leicester as well.
Don't get mixed up and go to Bedford.
That's where me and Gaz are from. That's where me and Gaz are from.
Where you're from.
I think it's time to move on to some book differences.
Edinburgh.
Okay, so I thought this was interesting, Emma. And Emma, feel free to chime in if I've missed anything here, because, you know, that's what we'll do. We'll bounce off each other here, okay? I thought that George and Hippolyta have a son in the novel,
they
correct?
Do.
Horace?
Are you calling me Horace?
What the fuck? I'm so confused.
Horace?
I was like, what's my name?
Is that correct, Horace?
Hey, Horace, is that right?
Fifth person on this podcast out of nowhere. That is correct.
Yeah, you are right. And obviously Horus is an ancient Egyptian god, but I think also a constellation, as is Diana, the god of war.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I thought that was an interesting change. I thought that was an interesting change, and one I wasn't quite sure why
Brian.
They made that change.
Right.
But maybe that will become evident throughout the season. I thought the mysterious car showing up and stopping the chase. Correct me if I'm wrong, Emma, but I believe that Letitia actually uses some real good initiative in this sort of that fire chase scene, and she sneaks off and releases some horses into the road or something that stops them chasing them. I believe that's so she uses a bit more initiative.
She does that beforehand. So she climbs out of the bathroom window in the restaurant and goes and lets a load of horses out into the street, which distracts the guys and gives a bit of a head start. But the car does still arrive.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So that does still happen.
Then the car arrives. Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, I think Letitia obviously just runs out and says, let's get the fuck out of here in this. But then she's a bit more cunning, it seems, in the novel. Like, she's always got, like, a plan. And even later on, I think, in the sequence with the monsters, she's also, like, hiding out in the car, if you get what I mean. And then she distracts the officers in a way. So
after the fight with her brother, she's told that she can't go with them for the rest of the journey, but she hides in the back, and that's what kind of saves the day.
Yes. Whereas here monster it's full hell. Blown monster town. Yeah. And talking about the monsters, as I say, it's a lot more in the shadows in the book. I mean, they just go mental for it here. And they're heavily leaning into sort of, I think what they're doing, obviously it's called Lovecraft Country. And I think the book is a bit more reserved with some of its Lovecraftian references. And they come about a lot later. They've seen the title of the show, they've seeded it as this, and they go, right, let's just lean heavily, way more into it than actually is in the book.
You could also describe it as embracing it, if you were so inclined. I think also that if you're going to make a show out of something like this, you kind of want to do that, don't you? You want all the blood and the gore and the excitement and the horror, because it will draw a certain kind of audience in.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. This is going to definitely draw two types of audiences at least, and I think that's the thing that makes it fantastically interesting. A mesh of genres, which we've talked about.
Exactly.
Maybe more audiences, Gareth. I know you're chuckling over there. Yeah,
four audiences.
Seven.
Just the two.
There's four, we're
aiming,
in total.
We're aiming for three, but if we get lucky, we might get four.
All right. Guys, do you want to... Should we move on to some listener feedback? Listener feedback? Mm. Okay, so
audience
anyone
one.
Can write into us. This is from audience one.
Have we heard from both of them?
anyone can write into us. All you have to do is email anyone. At fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. That's just email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. There'll be the email link in the description of the episode. Let us know your thoughts on this first episode. Let us know what you're excited preferably. About. If you think this is a 5 bloob or a 3 bloob, like John said. Yorick Chapfallen, one of our Patreons, has got in touch with us prior to this episode airing and has said the following. Hey there, Fan Critical team. I'm super excited that you're going to do Lovecraft Country next. I read the book back when it came out. And when I first read it, I wasn't aware of Lovecraft's blatant racism. I've never read anything by him and didn't know much about him. Now that I do know more, it's fascinating that Ruff combined his gothic horror style with his actual racist life. Really clever idea, quite meta on a level that I didn't appreciate the first time around. That said, the fact that Ruff is a white guy is interesting. I wonder how the black community, especially African-American community here in the US, feels about that. Is it okay for a white guy to write a novel about racism through the eye experiences of black characters? What do you think about that, guys? It's an interesting question.
It's a really interesting question. And I think I said in the preview pod that I hadn't looked to see whether he was white or black, but then I did afterwards. And I think, for me, it's interesting. But I, reading it from a white perspective, I think he's done a great job. But
I don't know. Are authors supposed to be limited to writing about things from their own perspective?
I think that's the thing. I think obviously he's heavily researched and
feels like it.
When you read the novel, Emma's right. Obviously, as a white person reading it, you feel that you're really going through these experiences with the characters. It's very well, it's so well written, I think, this book. But I'd be interested to hear another take on it, because obviously that's just my perspective. But I think he's done a great job of getting that message across anyway. Regardless, he says, I'm thrilled that we have people like Jordan Peele and Misha Green adapting this for TV and making sure the racial themes are accurate. I'll be really curious to see how they change from the original text in that regard, i.e. what did Ruff get right and what did he get wrong? Anyway, I've already told the wife that we're going to have to watch this one episode at a time, like we did for Watchmen and Westworld, so I can be following along with your podcasts in real time. Normally, we would save the show for the end and just binge watch it, but you can't wait to hear what we all have to say. So that's nice.
Thanks,
that's nice. They're changing their viewing methods
good,
for
that.
Us.
Yeah, that's
thanks.
Good.
Thanks, Jorick.
Yeah, no, look, good on him.
That is very good.
I'd, you know, let the wife do what she wants, to be honest. I'm a big proponent of that, you know, girl power and that.
Free will.
Just on the, look, maybe this is why I see some of the scenes as quite cliched. You know, maybe they are, because the perspective is from someone that is just like, you know, it was bad, wasn't it? Has no real understanding of it.
Mm.
But again, look, I've not read the book, but...
that's interesting.
Having said that, there's a big criticism of a lot of Spike Lee's early stuff, where his white characters are very like one tone, and there's like no depth to them whatsoever. And obviously he's developed as he's gone. So I don't know. I tend to be on board with what Gaz is saying, that I don't necessarily think that you can't write about that subject matter. Otherwise, it's just like, how limited do you want to be as a creator?
Exactly.
And look, the fact that his work is being adapted by, you know, I mean, Jordan Peele and J.J. Abrams would suggest that there is some quality there. And I suspect that not a lot of it is going to be heavily changed, but who knows?
Well, I mean, it's not been so far. And actually, I think one of the great things about being a creator, a writer or a producer or whatever it might be, is that you get to do the research into something that you don't know and make it real for your viewers and your ears.
We live in a world where you should encourage a creative process that is beyond just, you know, what you live and understand, and you will be judged on the quality of that output. And if it was a load of shit, then you get people going, I'm not buying this book, it's terrible. But on the other hand, HBO have picked it up. So there's obviously something about it. So look, fair play to him, I say.
Mm. And that's it for listener feedback this week. Thank you for your email, Yorick. We'll obviously, now feedback is open because the first episode is aired. You can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. That is fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. More Cthulhu Corner next week. More feedback next week. Back to Emma.
More Lovecraft Lounge next week.
Thank you, Len.
Cthulhu has come down from the heavens to spew Lovecraft all over the front room.
Thank you, Gaz, for lying around in the Lovecraft Lounge. I can't even speak.
No problem.
Lovecraft Lounge. Yeah,
oh, Cthulhu!
Put your pants back on. Thank you for joining us to talk about episode one, Sundown. If you have enjoyed it, as we've said earlier, please subscribe, leave us a review, send us some feedback.
Subscribey.
Len has already given you the email, fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us and chat to us on social media. We are @fan_critical on Instagram, @fancriticalpod on Twitter, and just search Fan Critical on Facebook. But for now, I'd like to say thank you to Gaz.
Thank you, Emma.
Len.
Cheers.
And thanks, John.
Thanks.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next week for episode 2. Bye-bye.
See ya.
All hail Cthulhu.
Ole Sangulu.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.